heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
Well, everybody knows by this time that Donald Trump is a disruptor. That's what the man does. That's what he's all about. But here's the thing I need you to remember, that Donald Trump wasn't just a disruptor here in the United States. And he certainly wasn't a disruptor to the political class. And we all know that he was. He was a disruptor to not just Democrats, but Republicans, the entire establishment. He was a disruptor. Somebody that they didn't quite know what to do with Donald Trump. But I'll tell you, it goes a lot deeper than that. You see, you have to remember, Donald Trump was a disruptor to the world. And this was not going to be business as usual, people. It wasn't going to be politics as usual. It was going to be politics and business on steroids is what it was going to be. And Donald Trump was going to change things up just a little bit, made a lot of people uncomfortable. And when you think of some of the things he's done around the world already, you'll see why people are uncomfortable with Donald Trump. And of course, there's always this conversation about the United States and the United Kingdom. You've heard the words special relationship many, many times. So what is that special relationship? And I thought of that as I seen them on the world stage. Of course, Theresa May was just days from her exit in resigning as the prime minister there in the UK. It was an awkward time, really, to be visiting the UK, or was it? Maybe it was purposeful. Maybe there was a purpose to him visiting at that time. Yeah, this was, of course, a state dinner. This was with the Queen specifically, and that's what he had already said prior to that he was really looking forward to. In fact, the buildup to that, I noticed, he was talking more about the Queen than he was Theresa May, because the British Prime Minister was done. I mean, she had already announced her resignation, so it was pretty clear what was going to happen. And the attention was really put on this formal state visit, if you will. That was the attention. And the visit with the Queen, you know. And you've seen the videos and the photographs of the helicopter landing there at the castle, all of the pomp and pageantry that goes with that sort of a state visit, of course. But the one thing I was paying attention to, I love to watch the body language of these people and of politicians and world leaders. And specifically, I was very curious to see the body language of Donald Trump and Theresa May. How was Theresa May going to handle this? And how was Donald Trump going to handle it? And of course, everybody was thinking, what will Trump say that will step into something? In fact, the press and the media, the coverage here throughout the United States was odd, in fact, for a visit like this. In fact, they were looking to see when he would fall so they could quickly report on that. And the fact that he didn't, and it was a very successful trip, well, then there was very little reporting. They didn't want to play that out. And that's typical with the media and how they play with Donald Trump these days. They don't report anything good or anything new, newsworthy. They just want to look for the thunderstorms and the clouds here that they can report on. And we all know that. Everybody knows that. On all sides of the aisle, everybody realizes what the game is at this point. I mean, unless you're living under a rock, people. So the president, prior to leaving, he says it, you know, the reporters were looking for something juicy that he might say about Theresa May. They're always looking to ask a pivotal question to Trump, because let's face it, if you ask just the right question and he answers it back with a slam, you'll get notoriety like you've never had before in your life. And the publicity will be from sea to shining sea almost immediately. It'll be publicized because, you know, you stepped right into it. And that's what every reporter, I think, is looking for. So they always put those questions out there, those kind of gotcha questions, and they try to look for, you know, some sort of an angle. So he says prior to that trip, he said, "I feel badly for Theresa. I like her very much." This is, now, of course, that's not exactly what the reporters want to hear, but you know how that goes. "She's a good woman. She works very hard. She's very strong. She decided to do something that some people were surprised at. Some people weren't. It's for the good of her country. But I like her very much, in fact. I'll be seeing her in a couple of weeks." And then he went on to say he felt badly for the departing prime minister, but he was looking forward to the trip and looking forward to this formal state visit with the Queen. So I was very curious, people, to see the body language of this trip, to see this special relationship, because things have not been really special there for a while, if you ask me. In fact, things have been downright weird. They've been odd with the British for a while. And I'm not going to blame it all on Donald Trump, but it has been odd. I think part of it's that reason. I think they don't know how to take Donald Trump. I don't think the world was ready for Donald Trump, quite frankly. I think you'll agree with me on that one. So the president says that we have the U.S. and the U.K. have the greatest alliance the world has ever known. That was it. And then they talked about the trade deals and all, and that, you know, hopefully there'd be a great trade deal once they get Brexit handled. And, of course, that was the bottomless pit for Theresa May. She quite didn't know what to do with that. Couldn't get Brexit together at the end of the day. That really was her demise. Of course, there's a lot more we don't know about that. Remember, the British are they interest in politics out there and how they play, you know. We don't always know everything that we think we know. And that's the point of this story today, people. You know. So I want to fast forward to the Steele dossier as we talk about the British here. And this was, I think, arguably, not for me, but maybe for you, the most powerful wedge that created one of the biggest rifts between the political classes of Washington, D.C., that particular dossier, that Steele dossier, that created quite a problem here. And because of it, America was dragged into a, what, better than two-year war, I guess you'd call it, or a holding pattern for some, waiting for the completion of the Mueller report, Robert Mueller. That was going to be the end-all, cure-all, fix-all, right? That was going to do it. Of course, we know it didn't do it. And, of course, his opposition continues to look for something else. Well, I want to tie this all back to the British now, Christopher Steele. Now, Christopher Steele, you know, is a former MI6 operative, okay? He's a spy, is what he is. He was famous now for collecting this dossier. He pulled all this stuff together. He was the guy who did it. He retired, by the way, from the MI6, as I remember back in like 09, right around that area. So about 10 years or so ago. And so he was hired by, he compiled the dossier for Fusion GPS in Washington. This was the research firm that was working for Hillary Clinton. And you know the story by now, so there's no, we don't need to go down that rabbit hole too far. But Christopher Steele is an interesting player here within the British. And I've been wondering all along how much the British government knows. How much did Theresa May know? How far up did this go, right? Well, back in April, April 17th, the President Trump puts out a tweet. He says, wow, the FBI made 11 payments to fake dossier's discredited author, Trump hater, Christopher Steele. The witch hunt has been a total fraud on your president and the American people. It was brought to you by dirty cops, crooked Hillary, and the DNC. It's a hell of a tweet, isn't it, here? He gets a three-for-oner. Dirty cops, crooked Hillary, and the DNC. So this dossier, we all know, obviously you've heard the word unverified. Well, of course, because it was all garbage. It was all made-up stuff. And this is the document we all know that was used to obtain these FISA warrants. And this is what Brennan, Clapper, and Comey continued to use. And of course, Comey played both sides of that, as well as they all did, Brennan, Clapper, and Comey. And they would tell the court something different from what they would tell the political elite or others about this dossier, that, you know, maybe it was okay. It wasn't salacious. That didn't always come through to the courts. I mean, that's how they got those FISA warrants. They didn't go in there and proudly say, oh, this is all unverified. It's all garbage. Remember, this was about the yellow showers and the prostitutes, and this stuff was so far out there that it became a late night joke real quick, obviously. So what if this retired MI6 operative, who was he really working for? And could he also been working for the British government? Could that be potentially true? Steele tells the Justice Department, you remember the collaborator there, Bruce Orr, that he was absolutely desperate, I mean desperate, to prevent Trump's election and would do just about anything on behalf of that mission. You remember that statement, don't you? That came from Christopher Steele. And you remember there was a lot of buildup to that, that a lot of people were trying to, they were just trying to stop Trump. And of course, we've seen all the texts and all of that between Page and Strzok and all that. We went down those rabbit holes already, people, you know. But here's the catch of it. I think a lot of people around the world, including the British, that special relationship, never wanted a President Trump. They didn't want the first term. Let's put that right out there right now. They didn't want the first term. And I got to tell you what, they're nervous right now because they're going out of their way to make sure there's not a second term. And that's where people are nervous. Now, I want to read you this. The Lords, the House of Lords now, they cite Trump's withdrawal from the Paris Climate Change Agreement, the Iran nuclear deal, and the United Nations Human Rights Council, as well as his actions in the Middle East, his attacks on NATO, his support of the nation state, and correspondent attacks on globalist institutions, and the imposition of trade tariffs as major beefs. You think he upset a few people? You think? So back to the disruptor, Trump the disruptor. See, so the real takeaway from all this is Trump wasn't just disrupting politics in America. Trump was disrupting politics all over the world. I mean, this was an earthquake heard around the globe, people. That was Donald Trump. Because you see, Trump was not the political class. And they didn't know what to make of Trump. But they knew he was an unknown, and he makes them very nervous. They also realized that Trump wasn't going to play with the deep state operatives. He wasn't part of that group there. So Trump started doing things like asking for more, getting the trade deals in place, making all the NATO players put more money into the pot. And why do you say that? Well, how important is that? Well, if you consider people for just a moment, that all of these people that we're speaking of right now with the Paris Climate Change Agreement, right? The Iran deal, the United Nations Human Rights Council, all of the things we're talking about right now. I mean, people, there's only one way to look at all this. America has been the world's bitch for some time. I don't know how else you say it, but the United States of America has been their bitch for quite some time. They were all nervous. The British were nervous. Right? The French were nervous. The Germans were nervous. Angela Merkel, she about had a heart attack. They were all nervous. So, in fact, the British laws came out, and their first priority now is this. This is current day priority. No second term for Donald Trump. The primary concern of the Lords is that Trump is a disruptor. I mean, very clearly, he's the disruptor, and they don't like him. They don't want him. And that special relationship is in question. So how much did Theresa May know about that, I wonder, huh? Well, let me read you this other thing. Sir Richard Dearlove, he's a former head of the MI6 and mentor to Christopher Steele, by the way, a name you don't hear at all. Well, he's been telling his confidants that nothing Donald Trump does needs to be taken too seriously, since Trump will absolutely only be a one-term president. Starting to sound like those crazy texts that were being sent in the middle of the night between Strzok and Page and the rest of the cats, huh? Back to that body language where I started this. So here's what I got out of it. So I seen Theresa May on the world stage, and I seen Donald Trump up there. And this is as Theresa May is just days now from her resignation, and she's just a lame duck now until they get someone else and they do their elections out there. And I seen Donald Trump, and she got up there and talked about this fabulous, harmonious, amazing, kumbaya special relationship with the British. And I was just watching, and I seen Trump look over. He would look straight ahead, and then he would look over and glance at the prime minister, and then they'd look back and forth. And I kept looking at the body language, and I kept thinking, I just wish I could read Trump's mind. I can imagine what he's saying inside of his mind. If I could just read his mind, I wish I was a mind. That's one of the times I wish I was a mind reader. But I got thinking to myself, what if we could really read Trump's mind? Because you know what he'd be saying under his mind? Well, we'd be using some colorful adjectives we won't use here for sure. But I'm sure the president was saying under his mind, because the president knows a lot. And I'm sure he was saying, yes, special relationship, May. I'll give you a special relationship. The British tried to run me over with their double-decker bus. You SOP. We'll leave it there, huh? Yeah, you just know very well that that Trump had a lot to say. And his mind was moving quickly. You could see his body language and the way he kept looking over at Theresa May. Well, I thought that was funny as hell, I have to tell you. But you know, I was proud of him, actually. He actually did kind of a PC thing there. And he kept nodding his head. Yeah, special relationship. I'm all over it, May. Your ass is out of here and I'm sticking around for a while. How do you like those cookies? That's what I got out of that. I think he had the last laugh. And then back to the special relationship. You got to love this, people. Absolutely amazing. So here's the question to ponder today. Is America a sinister place full of elitist cutthroats willing to throw principles of good government under the bus to win at any cost? That's the question I hope to answer for you today. I bet you can answer that question.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
I'd like you to meet today Thomas Lipscomb. He's the founding publisher of Times Books at the New York Times Company, and Tom has many, many bestsellers. He's a great journalist. I have thought all along the British are involved in this in some capacity. And as I was watching back to that press conference, I was watching the body language. I found it very interesting, Tom, in watching both May and Trump. And so I go right to the juggler right now with you and ask you, with your research and your investigative work you've done, where do you sit in this? How deep does this go with the British?
Well, let's go back and see if we can answer a mystery that nobody seems to pay any attention to. I've had some experience in intelligence, and the United States has been shaking and baking intelligence documents since the Zimmerman telegram that started World War I 100 years ago, okay? Mm-hmm. And we're pretty good at it. We don't just simply take this stuff the minute we read it. We put it through a filter, we back-check it, we have all kinds of analysts checking out probability, the same way that State Department gal did when she sat down with Christopher Steele and quickly could see there was no consulate in Miami, therefore he's a liar, right?
Right.
A lot of that goes on in assessing a document. But we hear from James Comey that the Steele dossier was unverified and salacious. Okay. We hear from Christopher Steele himself that he doesn't know if 50% of it is true. We don't have anybody claiming it's true except the people who signed the FISA documents saying it was verified. What's going on here? How come the normal intelligence shakedown of a highly suspicious document was waived? And the thing became not only used for intelligence, but for a counterintelligence operation, for the briefing of Congress, and for release covertly to the news media in the United States of America. It's the most outrageous use of a piece of intelligence material that's unverified in American history. Yeah. Why is that? Okay. My conclusion, to go to your question, is because we trusted the source. We didn't think we needed to look at it. We thought it was already taken care of, because where did we get it from? We got it as far as we wanted to see it, and we know damn well it came through Cohen's Perkins, and it came through Fusion GPS, and it came through DNC. But for purposes of our government under Obama intelligence community, it came from British intelligence, a 10-year Moscow station chief for MI6, and somebody must have verified it.
And Steele is clearly on the record as hating Trump. I mean, there's no secret to that point there.
Everybody knows that. I mean, everybody knows that. Our own people know it. We've now got all the documentation for the last couple of weeks proving that. Doesn't matter if he hates Trump if the stuff is good.
Right. Well, it's true. Tom, let's do one thing here. Now, when we say we, let's take a moment here as we're talking about this we, as you just did that great opening there. And I just want to touch on the we a moment, okay? Because the we was, let's clarify the we, because I don't want people to think the we is like America, like freedom-loving Americans. That's not the we. The people who wanted Trump never to get into office. It was the DNC. It was the Democrats. It was President. I mean, and the other question I have for you, and an honest assessment. I mean, you and I know the answer to this, but I mean, does this go to Barack Obama's desk? And you would say,
of course, without a doubt. Why else would Obama have asked for the intelligence community in December of 2016 to give him a report on Russian involvement directly to him?
Yeah.
And then had all three, Clapper, Brenner, and Comey, show up in his office a month later.
Yeah. Tom, how far do you think? I want to speculate with me a moment here. Now, with Brennan, Clapper, Comey, we know everything is on high speed right now with Attorney General Barr, which is why they didn't want him in there. And they're nervous as hell about all of this. And you got the Horowitz report coming. It's supposed to be any time here, if that's accurate here. Because we don't know if that's going to be a letdown or if that's going to be what they promise again. We've been down this road before with Horowitz, keep in mind, right? And so my wondering now is, do some of these players like Brennan, Clapper, and Comey, you know what's been amazing so far to me is that all of them at that level at the State Department and even Samantha Powers and all these players, they've been able to, one thing the Democrat operatives do really well, they are in sync step. That's one thing Republicans really stink at, is one thing Democrats are phenomenal at. They're always in sync step, Tom. And what surprised me at this point is that nothing has come out at all that directly has hit ground zero for Obama. When do these people start throwing him under the bus, do you think? Does that happen?
It happens, but we've got a lot of work to do here. We've been spending 2.5 years with the Mueller activity, and now we've got to let Barr and Durham and the rest of them unbundle. I mean, they barely got their tents up, okay? We're in such a hurry for it all to happen because we're in a hurry. It's not the way it works, okay? And I think we just
have to
be realistic.
There's a process, you're saying. There's a process.
There's a process. Barr is a process guy.
Oh, yeah.
And he's very good, and he's not going to leave 15, dangling pieces of fabric to be pulled apart after he's been through something the way Mueller did.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Agreed.
So we're going to see a really fine exercise. It's going to take time. And believe you me, Obama is going to be an international disgrace by the end of it.
Well, and that's interesting. I appreciate you being honest and putting that out there, because I think a lot of Americans would agree with exactly what you just said, because they've been following these bouncing balls, and you're exactly right.
If you'd bet me 18 months, 2 years ago, that Donald Trump could keep his mouth shut until the Mueller report came in and not intervene and say a bunch of stuff that would get him in deep trouble,
right,
I would have bet against you. I would have said, nah, he's going to blow it.
That's right.
This guy kept his cool all the way through and has kept his cool since. It's amazing.
Now, hold on. I like what you're saying right now. I like what you're saying, because nobody's saying that, and I agree with you. In other words, Trump doesn't usually keep his cool, and he doesn't usually keep his cards too close, but he really does, actually. They think because he says what's on his mind, but he does that strategically is what they don't understand, Tom. He does
exactly.
it strategically.
Exactly.
You and I know it, yeah.
Just like you were saying about what he said in England.
Right.
He, of course he loves Theresa May. He goes to bed with a picture next to his bed every night.
That's
oh,
it, buddy.
Come on.
That's it. I mean, the body language was unreal. I know. And I enjoyed that. And I was wondering to see how you would handle it. So at this point, you would agree, I think, with me. And I mean, my assessment is Trump knows, he knows almost all of this. He's already figured this out. He knows.
He knows everything.
He knows
but
everything.
It's not for him to start blathering this out.
Right.
He needs to articulate it through the Department of Justice and through the investigative process and let Barr bring it out. Let Durham bring it out. Let Huber bring it out. If he mouths off, it's just Trump shooting at the moon again. He thinks the moon is Mars. He thinks the Mueller report is, you know, I mean, it does him no good, but if Barr comes out with it, okay, and Durham comes out with it, so you don't anticipate, you know, you don't anticipate the move. That's all.
Yeah, now, he's done that well, but I have felt for some time now, and I haven't said this publicly, really, but I have felt for some time that President Trump knows where all the, I think he figured out quickly where the bones are buried on this one. Remember, the president has access to everything. There's nothing he can't get access to or get a hold of. When you're the president, it's all there. It's all there for
you. Well, once Mike Rogers briefed him, he said, turkeys, I get it. He immediately moved to his New Jersey estate and set up a bubble for a secure environment. He's been acting as if he's under attack ever since. And a piece I've got coming out shortly will show you it was under attack in the White House up through April of this year.
We are dealing with right now a massive, I mean, the most massive, I think a scandal is not the right word for it. What would you call this? I mean, it's not a scandal. It's
a
way
coup
bigger
d'etat. It's a rolling coup d'etat. The good news is they've blown it. Okay. And
news.
That's why Trump's job between now and the election is not to do anything outrageous of any kind. Okay. And he's just got to keep a solid performing profile, like the trip to Europe, the D-Day speech, the handling of Mexico, et cetera. The game has got to go to DOJ at this point, and he's got to keep a low profile and get through this election.
You got the Horowitz report coming, as you say. Durham is back there, the attorney doing his stuff in Connecticut. Isn't it Connecticut he's out of, I believe?
He's in Connecticut, but that's just a, you know, like you're in one place in the country and I'm in another. You can do everything remotely now.
No, understood, but that's where he's initially from. And so you've got these are factors.
Initial.
But now if we look at all of these factions that we're talking about around the world, they want no second term for Donald Trump. So let's talk about...
No, hold it. Hold it.
Go
we've
ahead.
Got Italy. We've got Hungary.
Go
we've
ahead.
Got Poland. We've got Romania.
Bermuda.
We've got a lot of places.
Do we have Bermuda? Bermuda? Bahamas?
Oh, Bermuda's for whoever the hell does the reinsurance there. You know that game. Okay. But there's an awful lot of the world that thinks Trump is just ducky.
Yeah.
It's the EU crowd that hates him.
Well, there's a lot of players in that EU crowd. It goes pretty deep, buddy. Don't make light of it. It's not just the EU crowd. I mean, it goes far deeper than that. I mean,
well, it goes to the Davos boys, but that's okay.
Yes.
I mean, I'm saying, where is the real threat? All this nonsense about this tremendous Trump had more against him in 2016 than he's got in 2020.
Well, that's an interesting question to ponder now. Hold on now. That's an interesting question. I want everybody to think of what Tom just put out there. I don't know if I can agree with you or not on that, but it is interesting to ponder that. If this is coming up now, if this is going to be, you're saying it's going to be more of a cakewalk this time out than it was last time?
Not more of a cake. I'm talking now about opposition internationally. The great world was one in which Obama was the wunderkind, Obama. And this guy's a turkey and is disgracing America. That's what we were told, right?
Right.
Okay,
right.
Now we've got all kinds of people praising Trump. We've got the Italians firing their chiefs of intelligence because the nasty fellows conspired with British intelligence to get Trump. Okay,
right.
The Australians apologized for doing anything or even thinking or dreaming of anything so nasty as to cooperate with British intelligence on Trump. And British intelligence apologized directly to Trump, says we'll never, never do it again, and we're going to spank those bad boys who did this. I mean, talk about setting them back on their heels.
Yeah, it's, well, but none of
this
that's made
the last 2 months.
None of that's made,
all made the press.
Well, let me ask you, what kind of a conversation do you think behind closed doors with May and Trump and with other British officials?
Let's watch what happened with British intelligence prior to Trump's visit. First of all, my piece came out accusing British intelligence of being involved in the dossier, right? Mm-hmm. Next thing we know, we find that the dossier that supposedly was produced by Democratic National Committee and Fusion was first presented to, guess what, British intelligence before Obama ever saw it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a Republican document in the early part of this thing. I mean,
so, but nonetheless, how come British intelligence has a big hot meeting? And guess who was the chief of station in London at the time this hot meeting and presentation prior to Obama seeing it took place? Who was the U.S. station chief in London who had to know about this meeting of British intelligence?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Gina Haspel, the current head of the CIA. So wait for that grenade to go off, okay?
Yeah, things have been real quiet with Gina.
Okay, and she's supposedly helping Barr and company.
I'm glad you brought that up. I was wondering on that. We don't hear about her at all. She's totally in, I mean, probably the way she wants it. She's in the woodwork right now.
She's just as quiet as a little mousey.
But you think that's so interesting. I didn't even...
Okay, she was Brennan's girl. And let's go back and look at Brennan. Brennan wasn't a CIA agent. He started out as a paper pusher analyst.
Mm-hmm.
And he was okay at it, not great. He then gets promoted. He goes into the White House every day under Bill Clinton to do the rip and read morning intelligence report. And the guy said, Mr. President, today we found 6 LSTs from the Iranian Navy moving from here to here, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That was Brennan's job. And Clinton decided he's sort of a nice guy. So he sends him to Saudi Arabia to be station chief after being a paper pusher. Never had operational experience in his life. So what does Brennan do? He becomes a PR man for the Saudis. You can't get any intelligence out of Saudi Arabia unless you're an operative. So he just simply said whatever they wanted him to say. He went native. And you look at his entire career, it's a disaster as an intelligence chief. He no more could figure out if the dossier was real or not than he could how to put a spy in covertly in Bulgaria. I mean, this. So we're looking at a bunch of incompetence. Mueller, a thorough incompetent, blown 3 out of 4 of the major cases he was on, and he didn't blow the other one only because it was prepped first by the New York Bureau of the FBI.
Yeah, Mueller was an odd choice for this whole thing.
Yeah, if you read my article, Mueller's flock shooting fiasco, you'll see what his record looks like. And it's a disaster.
Oh, yeah, we know.
He's done 2 things in his life. One is he was apparently a decent platoon leader in the Marines. Mm-hmm. And 2, he has a face that looks like a mournful basset hound.
Yeah, makes for good publicity. Which photo are you going to pick, you know? So Brennan, yep. Clapper, and Comey, do these three, your crystal ball, do they all end in prison?
I don't know who ends in prison, who doesn't. It seems to be just about impossible for a government employee of any stature to ever suffer anything for anything they do.
Exactly.
Our entire criminal justice system, our entire legal system is suffused with progressives.
Well,
the Bar Association, the Medical Association, they're all progressives.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right.
Look, it took us 30 years of incompetence, yours and mine and others, not watching what was going on as we were all having great lives, okay, for this to happen. We're not going to get out of it in 2 years of the Trump administration. It's going to take 6 at least, and we've got to clean up all the court system, and we've got to clean up the Supreme Court. There's a lot of work to do.
But for this to come to a head initially, so you see this going right past the general, that before Barr has any assessment on anything, you don't see any conclusions coming before November.
I don't see any conclusion before November, and that's just fine. the American people are taking a great big yawn about the Mueller report.
Well, there is some truth to that. I mean, a lot of people have turned this conversation totally off. When you start talking Pfizer or Dossier, they're out of there. They're over half.
Well, if you wonder about that, ask Rachel Maddow where her ratings went.
Oh yeah. No doubt. Well, because they lost all of that whole Mueller thing. They kept beating the drum on, and then people figured it out. Americans figured it out that she's just been blowing smoke at them for the last couple of years.
And another thing that Americans notice, but the press doesn't, for obvious reasons, every single person, Democrat, screaming for impeachment and one thing or another, is members of a couple of tiny ethnic groups. Mm-hmm. They're very different than other Americans. It doesn't make them better leaders because they can't really reach out and, you know, come up with 10 million Poles or 40 million Germans or some other ethnic stock. They're a very tiny little minority. And so they don't communicate except through the press, which is made up of their friends and brothers and sisters. So we're looking at a distortion. What we think is going on in the media is not people who aren't buying it because they don't relate to the people leading this charge. Mm-hmm. It's kind of weird.
How much of this flushes out when we're said and done to the American people? There's a lot of questions here. I mean, how much flushes out to them? Will we ever know really how deep the British were involved in this?
Oh, we already know how deep they were involved.
Well, but will that be in the public square? Not you and I know, and others, but. Yeah.
No, it already is as a result of story after story after story in the last 4 weeks. I just gave you a couple of elements. Those have been in the press, okay? And basically, look, the special relationship has been a one-sided relationship for many, many years. British intelligence is almost worthless, okay? Yeah. It's penetrated six ways from Sunday, not that ours isn't, and they're treacherous. We have a problem in the United States, and the problem is lawyers, okay? Our lawyer legislator just can't believe we can't just make a nice deal that's fair to everybody. If you think Israeli intelligence, British intelligence, Soviet, Russian intelligence thinks the same way, you're crazy. Yeah. I don't blame the Israeli intelligence guys for getting anything they can get their hands on.
Well,
their survival
that's
depends upon it.
Yeah, I've been reading reports on that. Trump, when he discovered how far the Israelis and the British are deep into our affairs here, he was surprised. But that's the thing I always say, Tom. We do the same thing back to all these people.
Absolutely. But we instead of talking of the special relationship stuff, mm-hmm. you know, although this is a great tradition between our two nations, it's kind of like the alliance with France, which, as far as I can see, disappeared in 1941.
Do you think this relationship is serious now? Do you think that it gets will there be a taint on this relationship moving forward, Tom? Does anything happen from this with the British?
No.
Or do you think it's just blown over?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. What's key is where else do the British turn if they really want Brexit? Mm-hmm. Commonwealth is irrelevant, except in one sense of the word. We're the only place they can turn.
Well, and
so
Trump,
let's all celebrate the alliance. Yeah.
And you're right to that point. And Trump was obviously that was his soundbite out there in the UK. But he kept talking about trade because he knows that's what he's got over their head at the end of the
day. Absolutely. Why be a bad guest and spank them for their misdeeds except privately? I'll guarantee you, he had words with British intelligence while he was over there.
That's what I'm asking. And I think he did as well. I think there was definitely some conversation.
He turned the air blue with those guys.
Yeah. I'm sure there was conversation with Theresa May as well.
Why bother? Why talk to a dead horse?
Well, that's you saying that, but that's not Trump. Trump always wants the last word, remember.
Well, I don't. He's only got so much time. And with Theresa May, you can reminisce about your grandchildren. when you're between governments in a parliamentary system, you're better off going to the races.
Yeah. So everything's fair in play. You don't see you feel it's all good and everything's going to flush out here. You're not worried at all.
I think the process is safer than the sudden excitement we want out of this, that, or the other happening. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. And frankly, I think Trump's job here is to try to tamper things down, make lots of friends, do what he can using his executive action to demonstrate that even though things are intransigent through the Democrat-controlled House, he's doing stuff. And you know what? It's getting through.
There are two schools of thought here. You hear Tom Lipscomb there, and he's saying, listen, it could be that this thing just blows over and there's no big deal and business goes on as usual. The other thing I like of what Tom says right there, and I get what he's saying. There are a lot of people who believe that everything is cool in paradise here and this thing will flush out. And that actually is refreshing to hear that a little bit from a guy like that, because as you know, people, we've had a lot of programs, a lot of people on here who think otherwise, that we're at some perilous times and that the hit we've just taken as a nation is profound. And so that's something you have to balance that in your own mind and think, is this just business as usual? I don't know. How much do you take for granted? How much do you don't take for granted, I guess, is the question we have to ask ourselves, really. It does still really blow my mind, quite frankly, though, that we're seeing the level of deceit and corruption that we're seeing. And I guess I shouldn't be surprised. Why should I be surprised, people? We're talking about a lot of players, not just here in America, but around the world. And it's all about power, corruption, and greed. It always has been. From the beginning of mankind, it'll be that way tomorrow as well, won't it now?
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com. where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
All right, friends, on with our panel of voices here. Ilana Friedman is a veteran intelligence analyst. She's a political commentator and host here at America Out Loud. Matt King is with us, and Matt is an independent researcher and a veteran of the United States Air Force. Matt, I want to ask you first here, honest to God here, you hear what Tom puts out here, and how do you picture all this now with the British? What do you say?
I agree that it is a crisis and it is massive. I also agree, though, with Tom. I mean, I think that he's a little bit of a realist on the amount of time that it's going to take to get through this. And things, Rome wasn't built in a day.
So you're thinking four, five, 6 years, Matt? You think four, five, you're saying same thing as him, like through his second term?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I could certainly see that, yeah. Hmm. Especially whenever you're talking about, even if Barr were to hand out indictments right now, what's the time frame for a jury trial to go through?
Exactly.
And we saw what happened. It took 2 years, or I guess a year and a half or so for Robert Mueller and his investigation and the different trials. It's going to take at least that as well.
Yeah, well, especially by political standards, because they all beat around the bush. Nobody gets to the point. And it wasn't what was being said on camera or on mic, but it was what wasn't being said, Ilana, that I was paying attention to, and the body language very clearly. What's your take of the British involvement specifically, Ilana?
Well, I think that there's an awful lot that goes on beneath the surface that we never see and actually probably rarely know about. I'm very curious about Tom's analysis about what has been going on beneath the surface that we really haven't been paying attention to. I liked your comments about the body language because I think that speaks volumes.
And it was, to me, I think a lot of things Trump was saying under his breath that I found, I thought would be fascinating. I wondered, Ilana, if they were going to have an SNL skit on that one, because that would be a hell of a skit for real, with the British there, with Theresa May. I mean, I found it very, very interesting, that whole setup there. I think the British involvement in this, here's the thing we should talk about here, guys. I think the fact that Trump the Disruptor came in. And I gave off a litany list of things. I want to talk to you both about that now. And things like the withdrawal from the Paris Climate Change Agreement, things like the Iran nuclear deal. Let's just take a look a moment. Ilana, think about the things that Trump has disrupted. I mean, just think a moment. The United Nations Human Rights Council they pulled out of. The actions in the Middle East, the attacks on NATO, making them all pay more money, the tariff wars. I mean, this guy did more than just turn the canoe over. I mean, he set the canoe on fire, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I think one of the part of the brilliance of Donald Trump is that he can keep all of these balls, you know, in the air without dropping one of them. He is absolutely brilliant. There are a lot of moving pieces in this puzzle that he's juggling. And he, I think I'm mixing metaphors, but never mind. The point is that he is doing it. I am a firm supporter of disruptors. I think they are the ones that keep us moving in the right direction because they make us think about the direction we're going in and to make the necessary adjustments that will, you know, make the corrections in the path.
I don't disagree with that. That's well said. But I got to say this, but you never see that in political circles, Ilana. You don't see that at this level, though. I've never seen this kind of disruption. Have you?
No, I haven't. And I think that is what makes him a truly great president in a time which is very confusing.
Maybe to you and I, but it makes him a threat to everybody else. I mean, you know.
Yes, it does. Yeah. People don't like disruptors.
No, well, they don't
he
like,
is a
yeah.
massive disruptor.
Oh, but that's what I'm saying.
He's spoiling all their plans.
Well, that's exactly it. That's what I get out of it, Matt, is what Ilana's speaking about. Which, you know, this, I mean, again, looking at this litany list of things, just take it, I mean, without even considering all the rest of it, when you put your arms around what he's done, I mean, with all of this said, I mean, this guy has been a threat. You know, we use the words, Matt, a lot, and I hate to use them a lot, but they're deep state. There's a lot of other words that can be used as well. Crooked bastards comes to mind as well, but deep state, Matt. But when you think about all these groups, Matt, and the people that he has really rained on their parade, you know, I wonder something else coming into this next election. You know, I was wondering. I know this is a hard question. This is actually a hard conversation to have. But do you think his life is in jeopardy? Some? Do you think he? I mean, security. I know is always around a president is massive, but. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I was thinking of that as a helicopter was landing in the UK, and I was thinking that came to my mind because there are a lot of people who want him out of there.
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, we always need to be worried about the president's security. And that's true. I recall feeling the same way about President Obama and the later years, like 2014 or so, whenever it seemed like there was tons of breaches of the White House and just security lapses and things like that. So
you mean that right-wing lunatic might get in there and knock him out, you mean?
Yeah, imagine what that would do to the country. So that's something that I think I'm always concerned about. But, you know, whenever you talk about him being a disruptor, if you rewind the clock back to 2016 in the campaign, he had the battle lines defined exactly right. What this is it's a battle between globalists versus the nation state.
Yes,
and so the globalists obviously are his enemy and that's who's threatened. So, but the reason why he had defined so well, and this will come back to Chris Steele here in a minute, is the globalists are and were colluding everywhere. It gets lost in this argument, and I think we're aware of it, but it gets lost that Obama came in during Brexit as well and colluded against Brexit. I don't know if you recall, but
I do.
He went in. It's the established norms are that the president will stay away during these kinds of campaigns and events and things like that and stay neutral. Well, he actually made a state visit during it and even went so far as to say that if they leave, that a trade deal with the U.S. would be, quote unquote, in the back of the queue. Later on in an interview, he went further to define it and said it may be 5 or 10 years before we get anything done as far as trade. that's why it's important that he had it defined correctly. This is globalist versus a nation state. With Chris Steele's involvement and what he's doing here to Trump, that's, you're really looking at a scratch my back and I'll scratch yours kind of situation. Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense. And, you know, to tie this to a globalist movement, Ilana, a lot of people have a trouble with understanding what we mean when that comes out. I think a lot of people immediately think about it's a conspiracy, you know, this globalist sort of conspiracy, you know. But in hearing Matt just make that leap and put it out there, and you take a look at this litany list of things I just put out there moments ago, which are all things he's disrupted. There really is a movement of globalists around that want a certain, they want it to be a certain way. And, you know, I used some pretty strong language in the opening remarks when I called, when I said that America is everybody's bitch. And I'm sure everybody, you probably did a double take, you guys, on your other line there, but I don't mix my words, Ilana, but that's the way I think people feel. I mean, when you look at the trade deals, when you look at the contributions we make in everything, when you look at that we go to war for everything, we really are. I mean, do you have a better way to say it? You probably have a better, more PC way to say it than I have, Ilana, but right?
Well, I think the president had a better PC way to say it. Very simply, We are the world's piggy bank.
I like mine better.
He was more diplomatic, I think. But the point is,
hard to believe Trump was more diplomatic than out loud. Can you believe that, Matt? She's saying that? I can't believe it. Go ahead.
How about that? This globalist movement has been going on for a very long time, and they've tied to the United Nations and tried to get us to subvert our laws to international law.
That's right.
And we've been fighting that. So, you know, this is something that we have to keep fighting. And I think President Trump is doing a hell of a job. He is fighting it. And he is promoting the nation state concept for the United States and anybody who wants to get on the bandwagon to do it. This is not a globalist who is in the White House. And I'm, for myself, I'm very, very glad.
Well, it came at an interesting time of our history as well, after the administration of Barack Obama, and where the trajectory of the country was at that point, because we were becoming every day borderline socialist by the moment here. And we were becoming, again, the world's, I keep using that word bitch, but I don't know other word to use. Matt, is there a more pleasant way to say that, buddy?
No, that works. That's got good ring to it.
I got your permission then. Well, Matt, I don't know what else to call it, because I really feel that we are that way. When you think, again, I talk all the time about this country and the amazing things we accomplish, but it really comes back to how terrific, how outstanding, how resourceful Americans are, Matt, you know? And I mean, I always praise our people, because I think there's nothing like American spirit, American pride and patriotism, you know, and that this proves it right here. When you consider everything we accomplish in spite of everything that's against us, and in spite of how much we have to put in the cookie jar as well, kids, I mean, that should tell you something as well. But I think when you look at all of this, Matt, and you consider that Trump he's unusual for a lot of reasons. But what if he had not come here? What if Trump had not won the election? God, that's like a nightmare, isn't it? In 2016, you almost can't even fathom that. But what if he had not won? And what if Hillary Clinton had taken that election? What would have happened to America, Matt?
Oh, man, I don't want to go there. The discontent in our country, I rely a lot on people that are older than me, older generations that have been through the 60s and other times of peril. And I ask them, have you ever seen anything like this? Like, is this as bad as it seems? Or am I just gauging it wrong because I don't know what other decades were like? And unanimously, everybody, and despite their political leanings, no, they would agree. No, these are bad times. We had cities on fire in 2015 with Ferguson, mm-hmm. nationwide protests. Mm-hmm. We had generalizations of cops are all bad, and they're all going out and attacking and trying to kill black people. Those days were scary. I mean, it was a powder keg.
Yeah.
And amazingly, what happened to all that discontent and all these protests and things like that? We don't see it anymore. So
wow.
There were a lot of elements that were feeding into that. But what happens if Trump wasn't elected? My gosh, I don't know.
We are being more and more divisive every day. And the division is not just a difference of opinion. Mm-hmm. It's a gut level hatred of the other side.
Yeah.
And it's a need to destroy the other side, and that's what we see on the Democrat side.
Well, a lot of that has been brought out by the media, and I would say I don't disagree with anything you say there, Alana, except that a lot of that has been very much embellished by the media. They've played all of that because they play for Trump to lose and they play for America to lose at the end of the day. And so I think that is the fuel to the fire here, which is why that public perception out there and the public sentiment is what it is, I think, to the degree. But you're still not seeing some of that, some of those heavy riots and some of those fights and those massive protests that we were having for a while. You know, things have sort of, in a way, calmed down a little bit here. I don't want to say that too loud, people. But, you know, the other thing I get from this program today, I have to tell you, is that I think it is interesting the way I've always said America has a pendulum that swings from left to right. And I've reported on this for many years, that I think when the pendulum swings too far to one side, it has a tendency to correct itself. We have corrective measures here. Now, if we don't ever have those, if we lose those corrective measures, we're probably going to be in a heap of trouble ahead, to whatever degree, whether it's far left, far right, because you have extremists on both sides, people, as even Matt was just saying, you know, when he was talking about Obama and the threats there. You have extremists on both sides. I mean, you do. You have nut jobs all over the place here. And but I think, you know, what I've been questioning in recent weeks here with you all and in my mind is the perilous road we're on, and where do we really find ourselves, and how serious of a time is this, as I ponder that and ponder the future of the next 10, 20, 30, 50 years that's in front of us here, right? And I've been thinking about that, as you know, a lot out there. I've shared some of that with you. But as you hear Tom Lipscomb talk, and then you hear Ilana on top of that and Matt, I think that the country does have a tendency, people. You got to admit, it does correct itself. It does fix things that need to be fixed. And so when you look at the promise of everything that's happening right now, it should leave you with a little bit of glimmer of hope, potentially, I think. And I think you'll also discover that President Trump is here for a reason. The country was headed in a real bad place. It had been a tough, really, I'm going to say 25, 30, 35 years, I'm going to say. That's it. Not just Obama was just the one point. But you go back, Bush set him up really well to come in and do what he did. All these big operatives, these globalist, deep state type operatives, which is really, to me, Obama, Bush, Clinton, Bush. You got to keep going all the way back there to get back to the Reagan days. And you're really talking over the last 30, 35 years here. So having said all of that, I think what's happened is I think God Almighty said time for a quick back to that pendulum I share with you all the time. You need a rude awakening here in America, and maybe here's what you get, people. And that's where the disruptor comes in. It's funny also how the evangelical crowd embraced Trump. A lot of people were perplexed by that. I guess we all probably were perplexed. I wasn't as perplexed up front because I think they knew a lot that other people did not know. And I think they prayed about it a lot, did the math. Interesting. So I guess what I'm saying is that there's faith in here as well. God's hands is in all of this. And you have to know that. You have to know that. It was time for the country to correct its measures. That pendulum had to swing back. And here we are. Here we are. Now let's just hope, friends, that pendulum swings so hard that it hits them in the ass on the way out the door, as they say, huh? Well, I'll tell you what. I got my fingers crossed, and I told you what I thought up front there. On to better days here. Just remember this. It's time for all of us to get involved and get loud.